I had these obsessive desires and thoughts wanting to control them, to, I don't know how to put it, possess them permanently. And as my obsession grew, I was saving body parts such as skulls and skeletons. I was branching out. That's when the cannibalism started.
Hi.
Hi.
Welcome back to Crime and Coconut. I don't think we ever remember to say that.
No. We just jump in. We're like, what's up? You know what we're here to do. Fuck shit up and make fun of serial killers.
Do the damn thing. So, Amanda and I have had such a lovely evening. We made dinner. It was great.
It's very romantic.
It was great. Cottage pour. We used one wooden spoon to make dinner.
Yeah. Cast iron skillet, you know.
We did what we could. So, welcome back to week two of Jeffrey Dahmer. Did you guys like the little Jeffrey Dahmer clips at the beginning? I didn't tell you guys about those. I'm going to try to do some for every episode that kind of tease some of what we're going to talk about. I am getting the audio from the Nancy Glass interview that Jeffrey Dahmer did. I don't know what year he did it, but it is the Nancy Glass interview if you're looking for it. It's on YouTube. It's like 17 minutes long. So this week,
who's Nancy Glass?
She's this really famous reporter, like TV reporter that focused on mostly true crime. She's interviewed a lot of serial killers.
Sounds familiar.
You've probably seen her in something. She was on a lot. She's been on a lot of true crime related things, a lot of true crime related shows, documentaries, and stuff like that. So I'm sure you've seen her. She's a really pretty, beautiful blonde woman. Even as she
older,
yeah, she is now.
Is she on a 60 Minutes?
You know what? Yes, she is.
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. So, just to recap, so we don't forget, last week we ended on Jeffrey Dahmer's first murder of Stephen Hicks when he's 18 years old. He's living at the house in Bath alone. And then he goes to the military. Military doesn't work out. He rapes a couple men, comes back to America. He had been previously stationed in Germany. He goes to Miami, ends up being homeless for a while, and then is like, yo, Dad, can I come home? This ain't working out. And so that's where we pick up today. So after he returns to Ohio, Dahmer initially lived with his father and stepmother, and they insisted on delegating numerous chores to him to occupy his time while he looked for a new job. He kept up drinking heavily, and 2 weeks after he came home, he ended up being arrested for disorderly conduct. He was fined $60 and given a suspended 10-day jail sentence. His father tried unsuccessfully to kind of wean him off his alcohol at this point. And then in December of 1981, he and Dahmer's stepmother sent him to live with his grandmother in West Allis, Wisconsin, because they could not bring him to a normal lifestyle for at this point, he's 19, almost 20.
So, like, hey, you kind of should be living on your own, but since you're not mentally okay, we're going to take you with us kind of thing?
Yeah.
Speaking of drinking and chores, I used to have this song. I used to have this song I would sing to myself. I used to pet sit for my cousin. He's a bartender. And I would go, every time you wash a dish, take a shot. And it was bad.
That's not a good thing. Don't do that. You'll break a lot of dishes.
I only played it once, and it ended in a bunch of Snapchats. I don't remember of me venting about all the kids that golfed at my high school.
Oh, that's good, though.
Yeah. Anyways, back
See,
to...
See, Jeffrey Dahmer's drinking problem led to him killing 17 people, so I think you're doing okay.
Yeah, I would say so.
So they sent him to live with his grandma. This is when he finally relocates to Wisconsin. His grandmother was the only family member to whom he displayed any affection, so he was completely different with his grandma than he was with all of the rest of his family. So they hoped that her influence, plus the change of scenery, might persuade him to, you know, change his alcoholism, to find a job, and to finally live responsibly and with a little bit of purpose since he was getting older, you know, he was entering his 20s.
Yeah.
Initially, when he began living with her, the arrangements were harmonious. He accompanied her to church, willingly undertook her chores, actively sought work, and abided by most of her house rules, although he did continue to drink and smoke. If you're friends with me on Facebook, you will have seen the picture I shared of Jeffrey Dahmer a few months ago. He made a giant bong out of snow.
Oh, I did see that.
He was a big pothead. This new influence in his life of his grandmother brought results, and in 1982, Dahmer found employment as a phlebotomist. At the Milwaukee Blood Plasma Center. He held this job for a total of 10 months before being laid off. So that's pretty good for him. You know, he didn't leave of his own accord. He wasn't fired. Right. He just laid off. That's not his fault. So he's doing fairly well at this point. And during this point, what this is called like a cooling off period. And this usually happens later on in a serial killer's career. Doesn't usually happen after like the first go of it. But I think it was just the way Dahmer's life played out that his cooling point happened so early on. He remained unemployed after being laid off for 2 years, during which he lived under whatever money his grandmother gave him. Shortly before losing his job, Dahmer was arrested for indecent exposure. On August 7th, 1982, at the Wisconsin State Fair, he was observed exposing himself to a crowd of 25 women and children.
Oh my god. I thought it was going to be some casual, like, oh, he's just pissing drunk somewhere.
No, he was, I believe, masturbating in front of them. He was convicted and fined 50-plus court fees. In January of 1985, Aggie really wants in, sorry if you can hear her scratching. Dahmer was hired as a mixer at the Milwaukee Ambrosia Chocolate Factory. And this is usually, if anybody knows anything about his career, this is usually the one that people know of, that he worked at the chocolate factory. He worked there from 11 p.m. to 7 a.m., six nights a week, with Saturday evenings off. Shortly after Dahmer found this employment, an incident occurred in which he was propositioned by another man while sitting and reading at the public library. The stranger tossed him a note offering to perform, I wrote fellatio, but we all know it's head.
Fellatio.
Yeah, fellatio. Oh, I lost my spot. Dahmer didn't respond to the proposition, but the incident stirred in his mind the fantasies that he used to have of being with a man and dominating him. So on and so forth. So he began to familiarize himself with Milwaukee's gay bars and gay bathhouses.
Gay bathhouses?
Dude, I know. I read this and I was like, why are there not, like, all female bathhouses?
That's what I was going to say.
I would go.
Well, maybe I shouldn't go. I'm looking respectfully.
I promise. Listen, I can appreciate the female body, too. All right, we'll talk after this.
Okay.
At this time, he was really trying. He was known to steal male mannequins from stores, and he would try to use them for sexual stimulation, thinking that, you know, he's very into that lifeless part.
I'm no. Sorry, I fucking hate mannequins.
That's Dude, so I'm going to have to cover this one story then.
That's so scary. Ooh,
there was this, I forget his name, I think his name's Bruce or something, and he was a gay killer too. And he took one of his almost victims, and the guy ended up surviving, and he recalls that there's, like, an indoor pool at the guy's house, and it's surrounded by nothing but mannequins.
That is absolutely terrible. Mm-hmm. I used to have, my bedroom window used to look over our driveway, and...
You had mannequins in your driveway?
No, but I was always afraid when I looked out there would be one. There was never one, but I...
Where did that come from?
I don't know. It's just, like, I don't know, scary. Scary.
Listen, I understand. His grandma, however, discovered the mannequin stuffed in his closet and demanded that he get rid of it. So this little old lady probably like, this scares me. I don't like this. Like,
just
please
like,
get it out
oh,
of my house.
Jeffy, what are you doing to me?
Right. But and if she had only known what he was really doing to her. By late 1985, Dahmer had started to regularly frequent the bathhouses, and he later describes this as a very relaxing place for him. But during his sexual encounters, he became frustrated at his partner's moving during sex. So, again, he doesn't want his partner to move, and it's beyond that. He doesn't want them to have their own thoughts or feelings. He doesn't want to have to consider them in any way, which is why it never worked out for him for them to be alive. Following his...
okay.
Yeah. Following his arrest, dates, which you guys probably heard this in the first episode, I grabbed a clip of him saying this very thing. He says, I trained myself to view people as objects of pleasure instead of as people. For this reason, beginning in June 1986, he started administering sleeping pills to his partners. Mm-hmm. He would invite them over, or he would just do it at the bathhouses. He would give them liquor laced with sedatives. Then he would rape their unconscious bodies. After approximately 12 instances at the bathhouse, administration revoked his membership and began to use hotel rooms to continue doing what he was doing. So he could no longer go to the bathhouses. Sorry, you fucked it up. So after his membership gets revoked, he reads a report in the newspaper regarding the upcoming funeral of an 18-year-old man, and he gets this idea that he's going to dig up the grave.
Oh my God. And do it to the guy's body.
That's not any better. But in Dahmer's mind, again, he's really, really trying to stave this off without killing people. And he'll tell you later himself, I don't like the act of killing, which I don't think that's 100% true. You don't do it 17 times if you don't like something about it. But he's not like a Ted Bundy where the killing is what gets him off. Mm. It's not the murder. So he's really trying to figure out a new way to get, I think you said in the first episode, get his rocks off without hurting people, without killing people, because he doesn't want to do that.
Which I guess is kind of respectful. Like, well, okay, take that with like a big fat ass rock of salt, because like
what is it? An obscene amount of kosher salt. An
obscene amount of kosher salt, because wow, yes, he knows it's wrong, and ultimately, no, he shouldn't be doing it at all. The fact that he's like, let me, like, at least try not to be an absolute maniac of a person.
Right.
Even more than he already is.
Right. Desecrating a body is shitty either way, but at least he wasn't trying to be the reason there was a body. Very, Ed Gein. Do you know the story of Ed Gein? Probably. We'll
do that. Okay.
That's a good story. He was a grave robber, too. So, he attempted to go and dig the coffin from the ground, but this was during cold months in Wisconsin, and so the ground was too hard and cold, so he couldn't do it, and he gave up, and he never tried to grave dig again. So in August of that same year, Dahmer was arrested again for masturbating in front of two 12-year-old boys as he stood close to the Kinnickinnick River. He initially admitted to the offense and was again charged with indecent exposure, but he changed his story and claimed that he had merely been peeing, unaware that there were witnesses.
That's still indecent exposure, though.
Still indecent exposure.
But even though, like,
here's the thing, he probably was masturbating, and those 12-year-old boys caught him, and he was like, this is exactly what I want! And so he just kept doing it.
Yeah, that's awful.
Yeah.
That's really terrible. Pedophiles suck.
Yeah. Yeah, because as you'll see later, he attacked children. It wasn't just men around his age. The charge was changed to disorderly conduct because of his plea that he had been urinating. And on March 10th of 1987, Dahmer was sentenced to 1 year of probation with additional instructions. He was to go to counseling.
Gotta love that court-mandated counseling.
Oh, it totally works, right?
Yeah.
It fixed him. He didn't do it. This story's over. Sorry.
Go talk about your feelings for a little bit, because there's something not right here.
Yeah. So that hotel that he had been using is pretty famous. People who know this story know that it's called the Ambassador Hotel. On November 20th of 1987, he was still living with his grandmother in West Dallas at this time. He meets a 25-year-old man from Michigan named Stephen Tuolomi. He meets him at a bar, persuades him to come back to the hotel with him. He had rented a room for the evening. This was very normal for him. He had no intention of murdering him, according to Dahmer, which, if you think about it, I believe that, because he hadn't been murdering people up until this point. He'd just been drugging them, I mean, that's not me excusing that, but he had just been drugging
them. But you said that he's, like, been with this guy multiple times, so...
He's never been with this guy. He had just been doing this at the hotel multiple times. He had been bringing partners back, drugging them so they would be unconscious and not... You know,
because, like, I'm sure there's some fucked up people out there, like, that have a lot of issues. I'll be like, as long as you pay me, you can drug me and do whatever you want to me.
What you want, just don't kill me.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, but he had just met this guy. He intended to drug and rape him as he lay unconscious, as he had done before. The following morning, however, Dahmer woke up to find Tuolomi lying underneath him on the bed with his chest completely crushed in, and he was black and blue with bruises. Remember what I said last time. Dahmer was fucking jacked. The dude was really strong and really big. He's over 6 feet tall. Blood was also seeping from the corner of Tuomi's mouth, and Dahmer's fists and one of the forearms were extensively bruised. Dahmer stated he had no memory of having killed Tuomi and later informed investigators that he could not believe this had happened. He talks in a couple of his interviews as if he knows that this is the moment that that cooling off period had been done.
Mm-hmm.
And it changed from, I'm just going to drug and rape these people, to I'm going to kill these people.
So you think it was like an instance of like a personality disorder? Like, do you think that something triggered him to the point where he unknowingly, like, wailed on this dude and...
Yeah, I think... I don't... Because Dahmer, in his life, had never really been an angry person. It wasn't like he was... Again, not like a Ted Bundy, where he's just really aggressive and angry at nothing. He wasn't... That wasn't in his character. I think what this is he was dealing with a lot of stuff that happened right after he turned 18, and he was an alcoholic, and so it just, he had a mental breakdown while he was drunk and killed the guy because he was capable of doing that already.
Yeah.
I think personally, if this had been his first murder, this incident right here, and not the Stephen Hicks, he wouldn't, I want to venture to say he might not have become a serial killer, because I think this would have freaked him out. I think he would have turned himself in.
Yeah,
But I don't know. I don't know.
Oh.
I think it's interesting. Some people will say and argue that he doesn't, that he knew what he was doing and he didn't black out. But I think it's 100% possible and reasonable to believe that he didn't actually. Because he admits to doing all these horrible, awful things later on.
Right.
Why wouldn't he just admit to beating a guy's chest in?
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing. I guess he's definitely an honest person.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of creepy, actually, to listen to him talk about it in such, like, a matter-of-fact way. To dispose of Tuomi's body, Dahmer purchased a large suitcase in which he transported it back to his grandmother's house.
Oh, Grandma.
Mm-hmm. And she had no idea. Then, 1 week later, he severed the head, arms, and legs from the torso, then filleted the bones from the body before cutting the flesh into small enough to handle pieces. He then placed the flesh inside of plastic garbage bags. He wrapped the bones inside a sheet and pounded them into splinters with a sledgehammer. The entire dismemberment process took Dahmer approximately 2 hours, and he disposed of all of Tuomi's remains, excluding the severed head, in the trash. That is a lot for a normal person to do, but...
Right, and also, like, deciding to keep the head as, like, a trophy is that serial killer mindset.
Just wait. Just wait, man. I go back to poor Lionel teaching his son how to preserve the bones of a body.
Mm-hmm.
And later on, I can't imagine how he thinks, like, well, am I the reason he wanted to keep the head? Am I the reason he knew how to dismantle a human body the way that he was able to? I mean, that's very, it's not just like he hacksawed this guy's body apart.
Right.
He was very methodic.
He knew what he was doing.
And this is the first time he's ever done that.
Yeah.
You know?
And usually, typically, like, people and murderers who, like, even when you watch Criminal Minds and you, like, see, like, oh, the body has been, like, accurately and professionally dismembered, the blood has been drained, like, this person knows what they're doing, they're almost always in the medical field.
Exactly. And he was the medic in the army, he does not have a medical background. He didn't go to medical school, like, he didn't learn dissection.
But you know enough.
Yeah.
You know enough, like, I...
Personally, the right places to sever somebody, and
yeah, like I would have never thought or knew how to cut someone's leg off. Mm-hmm. Like, I would have thought, oh yeah, just take a saw to it and just go through it. And after,
but
like,
you'd be doing that for hours,
and after, like, doing actual amputations, like, it's a lot easier than it seems.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like if he Dahmer's, it doesn't seem like a dumb person.
No, exactly. He's probably very scarily smart.
And especially if he was like, let me pay attention to this because it can help me in what I want to do later. Like,
if he didn't know that's what he wanted to do.
Yeah, or he could have learned that from dismembering animals. Like, right. It's like today, yeah, when I cut the fucking bones out of the chicken thighs. Like, yeah.
That was impressive. Mighty impressive. It's just so interesting to me that he was able to do that. Like, he woke up scared of the fact that he beat the guy's chest in, but he's like, ah, well, shit, and then just
took it and ran with it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So for a total of 2 weeks following Tuomi's murder, Dahmer retained his head in a blanket. After 2 weeks, Dahmer boiled the head in a mixture of Soil-X, which is an alkali-based detergent, and bleach in an effort to retain the skull.
So, like, Drano?
Yes. And that, I'm sure, was probably what his father taught him. He was going to use it for masturbation. eventually.
Ugh.
Yeah.
No.
Just wait. I tried to glaze over that.
Because that shit did not look good.
No. Eventually, the skull was too brittle from the bleaching process. I mean, I just bleached my hair like a fuck ton, so I know, like...
Oh, yeah.
He pulverized it then and disposed of it. Following the murder of Tuomi, he began to actively seek victims. He's like, I got my routine. I know what I'm doing.
I do have a question.
Okay.
How old... Is he dead?
Who?
Dahmer.
Oh, yes, he is dead.
How old was he when he died?
I want to say he was in his 30s.
30? Okay.
Early
30s. I was going to say, okay, the actions of someone like this and the reason that he probably, like, accidentally killed the guy and took it and ran with it, he definitely did not plan on living very long.
No.
He thought...
I think he would have taken his life if he had never gotten caught.
Yeah, he's definitely like, I'm just going to do this, like, literally, I'm going to live the rest of my short life in pleasure while I can, and then I'm going to die. Like, yeah. He had no intentions of living a long life.
I'm here for a good time, not a long time.
Well, yeah, I mean, depending on what your version of a good time is, holy shit.
And this was his good time, apparently. So he's got his routine down. He's like, shit, I'm an expert. I've killed two people. So he would go to gay bars again. He would lure them back to his grandmother's home. He would drug them. And then shortly after engaging in sexual activity with them, he would strangle them. That was his method of... He didn't stab them, didn't beat them again. While they were still... And it's... He likes to say he didn't like the killing, but here's the thing. He will openly admit to saying, I would give them the sleeping pills, I would lay with their bodies for a while and pretend like they were my partner. And then he could tell when they were about to wake up from the drugging that their breathing would change.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when he would strangle them, as they were just coming.
That's definitely a pleasure thing. Strangulation is not a pretty thing, and your fucking face turns blue, and your blood vessels pop, and it's a struggle.
Yep.
He enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah, he did.
Yeah.
He might not realize that that's what he was enjoying out of it, but he was enjoying it. 2 months after Tuomi's killing, Dahmer encountered 14-year-old Native American male prostitute named James Doxeter. I'm sorry if I said that wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's how you say it.
14?
14.
I hate this.
He lured that. This is pretty bad. If you don't like kid stuff, skip.
I don't think anyone likes kid stuff.
I mean, I know there's some people that are like, nope, sorry, can't do kid cases at all.
Yeah.
He lured the youth to his home with the promise of $50 if he would pose for nude pictures. At Dahmer's West Dallas grandma's house, the pair engaged in sexual activity, and then Dahmer drugged him and strangled him on the floor of the cellar. Dahmer left the body in the cellar for 1 week in his grandmother's basement before dismembering it in the same way that he did with Tuomi. He placed all of Doxter's remains, including the skull, in the trash. He boiled the skull first and initially retained it before pulverizing it, I think realizing that his idea of bleaching it to keep it for masturbation was not going to work. On March 24th of 1988, Dahmer meets 22-year-old bisexual man named Richard Guerrero outside a gay bar called The Phoenix. He, again, lures him to his grandmother's house, although the incentive on this occasion was just $50 to simply spend the remainder of the night with him. And I think this is interesting because, remember I said, I think a huge part of the reason he is the way that he is because he was left alone a lot as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And he has major abandonment issues. And he said, he'll say later, he's like, I wanted to figure out a way to keep them with me.
Well, yeah.
Always.
It's easier to, like, instead of being like, hey, I'll give you $50 to come home and have sex with me.
I'll give you $50 to lay next to me.
Right. It's like, it's more of like a, hey, I'm just a lonely guy. I think you're nice. And I just want
to be my friend for 8 hours.
I just want to spend time with you. I will pay you for it.
Yeah.
Like, shit, I'd be enticed.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'd be like,
absolutely.
You know.
I am paranoid because of true crime now, and I probably would eventually see the better side of that and not do it. But it would be very hard to say no to that because it's so easy.
Right.
He then, of course, drugged Guerrero with sleeping pills and strangled him with a leather strap. He performed oral sex on the corpse. Guerrero's body was then dismembered. After about 24 hours of the killing, the remains again were disposed of in the trash, and the skull was retained for a little while before being pulverized several months later.
I can't imagine being, like, the officer that has to sit here and collect this information, because it's not like Dahmer's talking about it, like, so then I performed fellatio and then decided to dismember the body. No, he was like, so I went down on, like, just...
Then I sucked his, and then I chopped him up.
Right. And like definitely describing it in detail in a way that he experienced it.
Exactly. He was intelligent, but it's not like he spoke eloquently like a doctor or anything. He's not going to speak like a detective.
Right. I imagine it would be on some kind of the same plane of like talking to your friends about your sexual experiences, except way more fucked up.
Exactly. You heard the way he spoke in that interview. Like, he speaks very well. Like, he doesn't sound like he's got issues with speaking or anything. And it's kind of scary that he just talks about it like you're one of his pals, and he's just telling you about his
Definitely doesn't give a shit about what anyone thinks of him. It's like, yep, I did it.
You think I'm awful? I know I am. I don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah. So on April 23rd of that same year, Dahmer then lures another man. And let me just say, so that was in March. Exactly a month later, pretty much, he finds his next one. So he's...
That's quick.
He's losing it. Like, he's going at it. He lures another young man into his house. However, after giving the victim a drugged coffee, both he and the victim heard Dahmer's grandmother say, "Is that you, Jeff?" Dahmer replied in a manner that led his grandmother to believe he was alone. She did observe that Dahmer was not alone. Because of this, Dahmer opted not to kill this particular victim. Instead, he waited until he'd become unconscious before taking him to the County General Hospital. Because he didn't want his grandma to say, "Oh, what happened to that guy?"
Right.
At this point, before his grandma, I'm assuming, wasn't really seeing them come in all the time.
Yeah.
So she wouldn't question it.
It's definitely a guilt factor. Oh, like, he wanted to preserve the image of himself that existed in his grandmother's eyes.
Right.
And that's why he did that.
Which is another, proving point that he is ashamed of who he is. He just doesn't care enough to not be that.
Well, yeah, when you're comfortable, with dying, like, he's... I know it doesn't say, like, that he was like, yeah, I'm ready to die, but he obviously didn't have any fear of the consequences that existed in his mortal life. Like, there's no fear of an afterlife, there's no fear of going to hell, he's just like, yep, this is what I'm doing, I don't give a shit, I'm just gonna keep doing it until I finally go.
Yeah, he was very apathetic, as he had been since he was a child.
Apathetic is a good word for it, yeah.
So September of that same year, his grandmother asked him to move out. So it was because of his habit of bringing young men into her house late at night and the foul smells emanating from the basement and the garage. Dahmer found a one-bedroom apartment on North 25th Street and moved into his new residence on September 25th. The following day, he was arrested for drugging and sexually fondling a 13-year-old boy who he had lured to his home on the pretext of posing nude for photographs. In January of the following year, he was convicted of second-degree sexual assault and for enticing a child for immoral purposes. Sentencing for that assault was suspended until May of that year, and on March 20th, Dahmer commenced a 10-day Easter absence from work, during which he moved back into his grandmother's home.
Ugh.
2 months after his conviction and 2 months prior to his sentencing for the sexual assault, Dahmer murdered somebody. He's like, I gotta go for a little while, better get my fix in. The victim was a mixed-race 24-year-old aspiring model named Anthony Sears, whom Dahmer had met at a gay bar on March 25th of 89. According to Dahmer, on this particular occasion, he was not looking to commit a crime. However, shortly before closing time that evening, Sears just started talking to me, so Dahmer lured him to his grandmother's home, where the pair engaged in oral sex before Dahmer drugged and strangled Sears.
What year was this?
89.
Okay, I don't remember exactly what year my Club Kids video was, but it was definitely, like, probably the 80s, 90s.
Yeah.
And I'm just gonna, like, highlight the whole, like, back in the day, gay people weren't the priority of police investigations.
They're the less dead.
And I think that's why he got away with this for so long.
I was literally, we're on the same wavelength, because I was literally about to say that.
Yeah.
He obviously, and you, there's a story later on that's going to make your blood curdle.
It was a big convenience for him that he was gay and was like, okay.
He is gay, and you'll find that he, pretty much all of his victims were either Black or Native American, like
people that he knew weren't going to be looked for.
Right.
Yeah.
He did, and he even said, he's like, I just thought they were more attractive. He's like, that's why I went after them, because they were more physically pleasing, pleasing to me. It wasn't because I was a racist or because I wanted them to die. He's like, they were sexually attractive to me. I liked them.
It was just a convenience to him.
Yeah. It just so happened to work out that people were homophobic and racist in the 80s and 90s. especially in Wisconsin. The following morning, he places the corpse in his mother's bathtub, where he decapitates the body before attempting to flay the corpse. He then strips the flesh from the body, pulverizes the bones. They were again disposed of in the trash. According to Dahmer, he found Sears exceptionally attractive, and Sears was the first victim from whom he permanently retained any body parts. He preserved Sears's head and genitals in acetone and stored them in his work locker.
Acetone is nail polish remover, for those of you who don't know.
Yeah. When he moved to the new address the following year, he took the remains there. So on May 23rd of 89, this is the same year, Dahmer was sentenced to 5 years probation and 1 year in the House of Correction with work release permitted in order that he be able to keep his job at the chocolate factory. He was also required to register as a sex offender. This just goes to show that if somebody is registered as a sex offender, it don't mean shit. They're still going to do it. 2 months before his scheduled release from the work camp, Dahmer was paroled from the regime. His 5 years probation imposed on 89 began at the point of his release. Dahmer temporarily moved back into his grandma's house in West Allis, and then in May 1990, he moved into the Oxford Apartments, located on North 25th Street in Milwaukee. Although located in a high crime area, the apartment was close to his workplace, was furnished, and at $300 per month, inclusive of all bills, including excluding electricity, and it was economical for him. I'm sorry, a one-bedroom apartment for $300 that includes everything except electricity? This doesn't exist.
This is also like the early 90s, too.
That's true, but like, damn. So on May 14th, this is where it kind of pops off. On May 14th in 1990, he moves into 924 North 25th Street, apartment 213, taking Sears' mummified head and genitals with him. Just, I want you guys to realize that those head and genitals were in his work locker while he was in prison. For like a year. Sat in his work locker.
Jesus Christ.
You don't know anybody.
Yeah.
You don't know anybody.
That's true.
Not a single person. Don't care what you say.
What are these apartments like now? Like, is that apartment still available for rent?
They don't exist. It was torn down.
Okay.
Yeah, and I believe it was torn down shortly after everything was taken out. I just don't see that being something that could, like,
well, yeah, stay
standing. Especially after you hear what he does later on.
Yeah.
Within 1 week of moving into his new apartment, he's like, gotta christen the place. He kills his sixth victim, Raymond Smith, who was a 32-year-old male prostitute whom Dahmer lured to apartment 213 with the promise of $50 for sex. Inside the apartment, he gave Smith a drink laced with 7 sleeping pills and manually strangled him. The next day, Dahmer purchased a Polaroid camera with which he took several pictures of Smith's body in suggestive positions before dismembering him in the bathroom. He also liked to take pictures of them while he was dismembering them. So this bullshit about how he doesn't like murder and nasty shit is a lie. He boiled his legs and arms and pelvis in a steel kettle with Soil-X, which allowed him to then rinse the bones. He dissolved the remainder of Smith's skeleton, excluding the skull, in a container filled with acid. He then spray-painted Smith's skull, which he placed alongside the skull of Spears, upon a black towel inside a metal filing cabinet. Approximately 1 week after the murder of Smith, about May 27th, Dahmer lures another young man into his apartment. On this occasion, Dahmer accidentally He consumed the drink that had sedatives in it intended for consumption by his guests, and when he woke up the next day, he discovered that his victim had stolen several items of his clothing, $300, and a watch. Get fucked.
I mean, I'm not saying that that's a good karma equivalent.
It's not.
But
I'm happy that happened to him.
I mean, you slip up, dude. Yep. Slip up.
Sloppy. He never reported the incident to the police. I wonder why.
Right.
On May 29th, he divulged to his probation officer that he had been robbed, though. I'm surprised that probation officer didn't look into that more, but whatever.
Well, in that moment, he was the victim, so it was like, that's, you know, true. What would we have to even look into?
Right. And he lived in a crime-laden area, so maybe the probation officer was like, well, I mean, you did it to yourself.
Yeah.
I'm putting Aggie to sleep. She likes that.
She's just
look at that belly!
She's just rolling around.
She's so cute. In June of 1990, Dahmer lures 27-year-old acquaintance Edward Smith to his apartment. He drugged and strangled Smith. On this occasion, he, instead of immediately acidifying the skeleton, or repeating the same, like, bleaching process. The Dahmer placed Smith's skeleton in his freezer for several months in the hopes it would not retain moisture. Freezing the skeleton did not remove moisture, and the skeleton of his victim would then be acidified several months later. Dahmer accidentally destroyed the skull when he placed it in the oven to dry, a process that caused the skull to explode. Dahmer himself was to later inform police that he felt rotten about Smith's murder, as he had been unable to retain any parts of his body. It was a waste to him.
Well, because he knew this guy, and right. He was like...
It was a little bit more important to him.
He's like, I want to keep it, and he ended up fucking it up.
Right. He said, it was my way of remembering their appearance, their physical beauty. I also wanted to keep. If I couldn't keep them there with me whole, I could at least keep their skeletons. This was him recollecting his motivations for, like, why he would take pictures of them and kept parts of them. Less than 3 months after the murder of Smith, Dahmer encountered a 22-year-old Chicago native named Ernest Miller on the corner of North 27th Street. Miller agreed to accompany Dahmer to, almost said to his heart and stomach, to his apartment for $50. That's the next line down. And further agreed to follow him, further agreed to allow him to listen to his heart and stomach. So you know that line? Jeffrey Dahmer, eat your heart out like Jeffrey Dahmer.
Yeah, I hate it.
It's starting to become a little bit more relevant, and you'll see why that's, like, actually said later on. But he had this obsession with, like I told you earlier, he liked to listen to them breathe to see when they were going to come back out of it. He liked the insides of their body just as much as he liked the outsides. He attempted to perform oral sex on Miller. He was informed that will cost you extra, whereupon Dahmer gave his intended victim a drink laced with 2 sleeping pills.
I mean, shit. Like, I'm not, like, supporting any of this, but if I were Dahmer and I wanted to keep this guy here and I already offered him $50 and he was like, give me another 50 and I'll stay longer. I mean, you plan on killing him anyways. You're just going to get the money back. Just give him the money.
Every time you're paying these people $50, it's the same $50. I don't understand.
You're not losing anything.
But I think it upset him a little because Dahmer liked the control of deciding, like, what is going to happen here and right. All that. On this occasion, Dahmer had only 2 sleeping pills to give to him. Therefore, he killed Miller by slashing the carotid artery with the same knife he used to dissect his victim's body. This is the only time he's ever used a knife, and it was just because he had to.
Mm-hmm.
Miller bled to death within minutes. Dahmer then posed the nude body for various suggestive Polaroid pictures before placing the body in his bathtub for dismemberment. Dahmer repeatedly kissed and talked to the severed head while he dismembered the remainder of the body.
He lives with his grandma still?
No, this is, he's living on his own now.
Oh, I was about to say, how the fuck is he getting away with
it? But he did dismember people in the bathtub.
What the hell does she do all day?
Listen, I don't know. She's at bingo. She's a good woman. A godly woman. She was at church praying for Jeffrey.
It didn't work.
It didn't. Dahmer wrapped Miller's heart, biceps, and portions of flesh from the leg in plastic bags and placed them in the fridge for later consumption. He boiled the remaining flesh.
Is this his first time eating?
Yes.
Okay.
He boiled the remaining flesh and organs into a jelly-like substance using the Soilex, which again enabled him to rinse the flesh off the skeleton, which he intended to retain. To preserve the skeleton, Dahmer placed the bones in a light bleach solution for about 24 hours and then let them dry on a cloth for about a week. The severed head was initially placed in the refrigerator before also being stripped of flesh, then painted and coated with enamel. So he's now painted 2 skulls. 3 weeks after the murder of Miller on September 24th, Dahmer encountered a 22-year-old man named David Thomas at the mall and persuaded him to return to his apartment for a few drinks with additional money on offer if he would pose for photographs. In a statement to police after he was arrested for all of this much later, Dahmer stated that after giving Thomas a drink, he did not feel attracted to him but was afraid to allow him to wake up in case he'd be angry over being drugged.
Mm-hmm.
So he strangled him anyway and dismembered the body intentionally, retaining no parts of it whatsoever. He photographed the dismemberment process and retained the pictures, which later aided in Thomas's subsequent identification. So he did, literally he did nothing with this except take pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Following the murder of Thomas, Dahmer did not kill anyone for almost 5 months, although a minimum of 5 occasions between October of 90 and February of 91, he unsuccessfully attempted to bring men back to his apartment. He is also known to have regularly complained of feelings of both anxiety and depression to his probation officer throughout 1990, with frequent references to his sexuality, his solitary lifestyle, and his financial difficulties.
On several occasions, Dahmer is also known to have referred to harboring suicidal thoughts. Mm-hmm. Whew. In February of 1991, Dahmer observed a 17-year-old man named Curtis Strouter standing at a bus stop near Marquette University, which is where his dad went to college. According to Dahmer, he lured Strouter to his apartment with an offering of money, with the added incentive of sexual intercourse if he were to pose for photos. Dahmer drugged and strangled him with a leather strap, dismembered him, and then he retained the youth's skull, hands, and genitals, photographing each stage of the process again. He's really spiraling. 2 months later, on April 7th, he encounters a 19-year-old boy named Errol Lindsay walking to get a key made. Lindsay was straight, but Dahmer lured him to his apartment anyway, where he drugged him and drilled a hole in his skull and poured hydraulic acid into it.
I know this guy. Yeah, I heard about this one.
He wanted to make a zombie, because at this point he's getting tired of the bodies
decaying
and not lasting. So he wanted to keep it alive so he'd keep it longer, but he wanted to take away the humanity from them and the desire to be a person on their own. The victim said, "I have a headache. What time is it?" And in response to this, Dahmer again drugged Lindsay, then strangled him. He decapitated Lindsay and retained the skull. He flayed the body, placing the skin in a solution of cold water and salt for several weeks in the hope of permanently retaining it. Reluctantly, he disposed of the skin when he noted it had become too fray and brittle. By 91, other residents of the Oxford apartments where he lived had repeatedly complained to the building's manager of the super fucking awful smells coming from apartment 213, in addition to the sounds of falling objects and the occasional sounds of a chainsaw. The manager did contact Dahmer in response to the complaints on several occasions, but initially excused the odors emanating from his apartment as being caused by his freezer breaking and causing the contents to spoil. Later, he would claim that it was tropical fish he had that had recently died. On the afternoon of May 26th in 91, Dahmer encounters 14-year-old boy. I'm going to do my best with this name. Conorak Synthesomphon. Synthesomphon. I'm so sorry if that's wrong.
Yeah, that's whack.
on Wisconsin Avenue. By coincidence, Conorak was the younger brother of the boy whom Dahmer had molested in 1988 and had gone to prison for. He approached the youth with an offer of money to accompany him to his apartment to pose for Polaroid pictures. This story's really awful. You're going to hate it. This is the worst one to me. According to Dahmer, Conorak was initially reluctant to the proposal before changing his mind and accompanying Dahmer to his apartment. The youth posed for two pictures in his underwear before Dahmer drugged him into unconsciousness and performed oral sex on him. On this occasion, Dahmer drilled a single hole into Conorak's skull through which he injected hydraulic acid into the frontal lobe. Before Conorak fell unconscious, Dahmer led the boy into his bedroom, where the body of 31-year-old Tony Hughes, whom Dahmer had killed 3 days earlier, lay naked on the floor. According to Dahmer, he believed that Conorak saw the body, yet he did not react to seeing the bloated corpse, likely because of the effects of the sleeping pills he had taken and the acid that he had literally poured into his skull. Conorak soon became unconscious, and Dahmer drank several beers while laying alongside Conorak before leaving his apartment to drink at the bar to purchase more alcohol. In the early morning hours of May 27th, the next day, he returns to the apartment to discover Conorak sitting outside naked on the corner of 25th and State, talking in Lao, I think is how you say it, with three distressed young women standing near him. Dahmer approached the trio, explaining to the women that Conorak, whom he referred to the alias as John Hmong, was his friend, and attempted to lead him back to the apartment by the arm. The three women they were like, "No, you're wrong," and called 911. So when this boy came out of the apartment, he had a hole in his head and was naked and bleeding from his anus.
Yeah, that's the one I was talking about when we first started this, and I was like, all I know is this, and that one of his victims almost escaped.
Yeah, this is the worst one.
I didn't realize he was so young.
14, yeah. And you're going to hate this even more when you find out how the officers react. Spoiler alert, they were later reprimanded for this, and I think they were fired. Upon the arrival of two Milwaukee police officers, John Balsarak and Joseph Gabrish, Dahmer's demeanor relaxes. He informs the officers that Conorak was his 19-year-old boyfriend, that he had too much to drink following a fight, and he frequently behaved in this manner when he was intoxicated. The three women were like, are you kidding? That's not what this is. And then when one of the trio attempted to indicate to one of the officers that Conorak was bleeding from his literally his ass, that he had seemingly struggled against Dahmer's attempts to walk him into the apartment, the officer harshly informed her to butt out, shut the hell up, and not to interfere, adding that the incident was domestic. And I've heard audio of the officer calling it in, too. They say, oh, it's just, I forget the exact quote, I'll try to put the audio in. Oh, it's just, you know, a boyfriend and the other boyfriend, and then him and the other officer, like, chuckle to themselves as if it's locker room talk. Like, it's funny to them that...
Well, they're literally like, it's just a couple of gay people. Why should we give a fuck?
Doesn't matter. Yeah. Against the protest of the three women, the officer simply covered Conorak with a towel and walked him back to Dahmer's apartment, where in an effort to verify his claim that that he and Conorak were lovers, Dahmer showed the officers the two semi-nude Polaroid pictures he had taken of the youth previously. The officers later reported having noting a strange scent of excrement inside the apartment. This was actually the dead body in his room that the officers were feet away from.
Well, they're probably like, oh, we'd rather not get involved with this.
Exactly. They just think it's nasty. They're gay guys, whatever.
Right.
They peeked their head around into the bedroom, but didn't really take a look. The officer then left with a departing remark that Dahmer, take good care of Conorak. Had they actually done a background check on him, they would have seen that he was a sex offender. They would have seen that this boy was actually the brother of someone that he had already sexually assaulted. And then they would have searched his house and found the dead fucking body on his bedroom floor. Yeah.
Butterfly effect.
It's really bad.
Jesus Christ.
They were, I'm pretty sure, fired later. Upon the departure of the two officers from his apartment, Dahmer again injected acid into Conorak's brain. On the second occasion, the injection killed him. Literally 20 minutes. After the officers left.
You can do a lot more than you think you can with like, part of your frontal cortex being destroyed. Your frontal cortex is only, like, really your personality and, like, feelings.
Yeah. Like, they always say if your frontal lobe isn't developed and you have a head injury, they say, like, that's a big cause in serial killers later on in life.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
But, like, usually you can, like, still function.
Yeah. The following day, the next day, May 28th, Dahmer took a day's leave from work to devote himself to the dismemberment of the bodies of Conorak and Hughes, retained both of the skulls. And on June 30th, about a month later, Dahmer traveled to Chicago, where he encountered a 20-year-old man named Matt Turner at a bus station. Turner accepted Dahmer's offer to go back to Milwaukee for a professional photo shoot. When they got there, Dahmer drugged him, strangled him, dismembered him, placed his head and internal organs in separate plastic bags in the freezer. Turner was never reported missing. 5 days later, on July 5th, Dahmer lured 23-year-old Jeremiah Weinberger from Chicago back to his apartment on the promise of spending the weekend with him. He drugged Weinberger and twice injected boiling water through his skull, sending him into a coma from which he died 2 days later. So he's, instead of the acid, he's trying other things, hoping that it will not kill them. Doesn't work.
This is where that, like... Yeah, he worked in the medical field, but he doesn't really know what he's doing, right. Comes into play.
Right. He was smart, but not smart enough.
Right. Like, he knew, like, okay, prefrontal cortex, that's, I can do that, but, like...
What do I put in
let
there?
Let me just, right. You know, hot ramen it and pour some hot water hot in there or something.
Oh, my God. On July 15th, Dahmer encounters 24-year-old Oliver Lacey at the corner of 27th and Kilbourne. Lacey agrees to come back to his apartment under the ruse of posing for nude photographs. They engaged in tentative sexual activity before Dahmer drugs him. On this occasion, Dahmer intended to prolong the time he spent with Lacey while he was alive. After unsuccessfully attempting to render Lacey unconscious with chloroform, he called his workplace to request a day of absence. This was granted, but the next day he was suspended. So his work is starting to suffer. His whole life is, like, wrapped around killing these people. He's trying to do it every day, like, once or twice a month.
That's pretty damn frequent.
He's losing it. He's spiraling out of control. Like you said, he did not care if he lived or died. After strangling Lacey, Dahmer had sex with the corpse before dismembering him. He placed Lacey's head and heart in the refrigerator and his skeleton in the freezer. 4 days later, on the 19th of July, Dahmer received word that he was fired from the chocolate factory. Upon receiving the news, he alerted 25-year-old Joseph Bredehoft to his apartment. Bredehoft was strangled and left lying on Dahmer's bed, covered with the sheet for 2 days. On July 21st, Dahmer removed the sheets to find the head covered in maggots, whereupon he decapitated the body, cleaned the head, and placed it in the refrigerator. He later acidified Bredehoft's torso, along with those of two other victims he killed within the previous month. Little side note I wanted to say, when it says he's acidifying his victims, that's in a giant 55-gallon drum in his bedroom. Smelled horrendous in there.
Ew, hi.
Yeah. Yeah. And he just would, once it was, oh, I'm going to try to speed this up, guys. Sorry. It's getting real long. I'm trying to rush through this. On July 22nd of 91, Dahmer approached three men with an offer of $100 to come back to his apartment.
$100?
Yeah. Well, it's three guys. Three guys. Okay. Oh, we're getting really close.
Buy two, get one free kind of thing.
Well, he only wanted one of them. We'll find out. To pose for photos, drink beer, simply keep him company. One of the trio, 32-year-old Tracy Edwards, agreed to accompany him to his apartment. Upon entering the apartment, Edwards noted a foul odor and several boxes of hydrochloric acid on the floor. Big red fucking flag, by the way. Don't ever stay in someone's apartment if there's a bunch of acid.
You can't buy it like you used to, though. That's true. You could, like, walk into Home Depot and be like,
I need 55 gallons of hydrochloric acid.
Literally your entire stock, give it to me right now. And they'd be like,
and I'm pretty sure I read somewhere that he got it from, like, pharmacies. That blows my mind.
Pharmacies, too. Like, back in the 80s, like, medications, Tylenol, that, they didn't have, like, the, if the label has been tampered with, they didn't have that, like, safety cover.
Yeah.
And that was, like, the whole, like, anthrax bit.
Right. Plus the Tylenol murders, I'm sure, changed a lot of that,
too. Yeah, that's what I meant, the Tylenol murders.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Those are fun stories. We should do those,
There's too. Reasons why we can't have nice things nowadays.
It's because of fucking Jeffrey Dahmer. Edwards responded to Dahmer's request to turn his head and view the tropical fish. Dahmer then placed a handcuff on his wrist. Edwards said, wait, what's happening? Dahmer unsuccessfully attempted to cuff the wrists together, then told Edwards to accompany him to the bedroom to pose for the pictures. While inside the bedroom, Edward noticed nude male posters on the wall and that The Exorcist 3 was playing. I forgot to mention this. He played this every single time he killed someone. He always played The Exorcist 3.
I didn't even know there was a third Exorcist.
It's very bad. But he says it made him, he felt evil, and so he just liked to have it on because it reminded him of the way he felt. He also noted a blue 57-gallon drum in the corner from which a strong odor emanated. There's about three fucking bodies rotting in that drum. Dahmer brandished a knife at him and informed Edwards he intended to take nude pictures of him. In an attempt to appease Dahmer, Edwards unbuttoned his shirt and said he would allow him to do it if he would remove the handcuffs and put the knife away. In response to the promise, Dahmer simply turned his attention to the TV. Edwards looked at him rocking back and forth and chanting before turning his attention back to him. He placed his head on Edwards' chest and listened to his heartbeat with the knife pressed against his intended victim. He informed Edwards he intended to eat his heart. In continuous attempts to prevent Dahmer from attacking him, Edwards kept saying that he was Dahmer's friend and that he was not going to run away. Edwards had decided he was either going to jump from a window or run through the unlocked front door at the next opportunity. Edwards next stated he needed to use the bathroom and asked if they could sit with a beer in the living room where there was air conditioning. Dahmer consented and the pair walked into the living room where Edwards exited the bathroom. Inside the living room, Edwards waited until he observed Dahmer in a momentary, like, he was kind of vegging, wasn't really paying attention. He requested to use the bathroom again. When Edwards rose from the couch, he noted that Dahmer was not holding the handcuffs. So Edwards punched him in the face, knocking Dahmer off balance, and ran out the front door.
He finessed the fuck out of that. He did. Like, as soon as that handcuff would have been on me, I'd been like, I'm going to try to escape. But he was like, let me just, like, play the cards now.
But he could see that Dahmer was on, like, he was not mentally stable. Dahmer was so sloppy that the normal Dahmer that had killed all these other people would never have let that happen.
No, but he was like, I'll do it if you take the handcuffs off me. And he's just like, let me just watch TV real quick.
He's like, okay, got to get my evil fixed with The Exorcist 3. 11:30 p.m. on July 22nd, Edwards flagged down two officers, Robert Routh and Rolf Muller, at the corner of North 25th Street. The officers noted that Edwards had handcuffs attached to his wrist, and he explained to the officers that a freak had placed the handcuffs on him and asked the police if they could remove him. The officers failed to fit it with their keys, and Edwards agreed to go back with the officers to the apartment where Edwards stated he had spent the previous 5 hours before escaping. He spent 5 hours with Jeffrey Dahmer.
Well, yeah, you can't just be like, okay, let me just sit on the couch. You got to build that trust, is what he was doing.
Tracy Edwards is a hero, because Tracy Edwards is the only reason he got caught. When the officers and Edwards came back to apartment 213, Dahmer was like, sure, come on in, acknowledged that he indeed had placed the handcuffs on Edwards, but he offered no explanation as to why he had done it. At this point, Edwards divulged to the officers that Dahmer had also put a knife on him, indicating to one of the officers that Dahmer had the key, so they took it from him. Dahmer was like, yep, it's on my bedside dresser, go in and get it, I don't care. As Mueller entered the bedroom, Dahmer attempted to pass Mueller himself to get the key after the fact, like, oh shit, I just told him he could go in my bedroom.
I forgot I had bodies in there! Yeah. Oh, how embarrassing. Oh my god, let me just...
Yeah, so at this, the second officer told him, hey, you need to back off. In the bedroom, Mueller noted that there was indeed a large knife under the bed. He also saw an open drawer, which upon closer inspection contained scores of Polaroids, pictures of human bodies in various stages of
this memory. Oh my god.
Mueller noted the decor indicated that they had been taken in the very apartment that they were standing in. He walked into the living room to show them to the other officer and said, these are real. When Dahmer saw that Mueller was holding several of his Polaroids, he fought with the officers in an effort to resist the arrest. The officers quickly overpowered him, cuffed his hands behind his back, and called a second squad car for backup. At this point, she's licking me. Mueller opened the refrigerator to find the freshly severed head of a black man on the bottom shelf. As Dahmer laid pinned on the floor beneath Ralph, he turned his head towards the officers and said, for what I did, I should be dead. And that's where we're going to end this week's episode. I'm so sorry that was so long, but I wanted to get all the victims in one episode.
Yeah.
That's a lot to unpack. I'm sorry if it was fast, but...
Oh, I can't even imagine those cops, like...
Yeah. I believe in one of the interviews it said that the one came out from the bedroom and immediately said, book him. Like, said, get him. Like, that was the first thing out of his mouth. Because they didn't know what they were dealing with.
Yeah, like, literally right now, like, that was automatically enough evidence to be like, he's going for something.
Yeah. I mean, he's got pictures of dead bodies. Don't know if he did it, but he's got the pictures.
Right. He's a suspect, at least.
Yeah. How do you feel?
I, like, even now you're telling me, like, this is an actual person who actually did these things.
It doesn't seem real.
It doesn't seem real.
No, it doesn't at all. I mean, you think... It keeps going and you're like, oh, if I saw that in a movie, I would be like, okay, that's too much. Like, that's not realistic. But this really happened.
And then, like, as far as I know, nothing, like, really traumatic happened to him. Like, he just had some disconnect with his family. So it was almost like a nature versus nurture kind of thing.
That's what I was telling you. I think this is one of those cases where he was born with this. Yeah. And I think his life, the way his life was growing up made it worse. But I think ultimately there would have been something. He would have, even if he had not become a murderer, he would have always been a rapist. Like, I think he would have always sexually assaulted men. And the thing that I think is kind of timely and important, and I'm kind of glad we did it during Pride Month and with everything that's going on right now, is a lot of people don't realize that he got away with, like you said, he got away with this for so long because they were gay men. Or because they were, you know, of foreign descent or of African-American descent.
Right.
And it's just a lot.
Oof, okay.
It's a lot to unpack.
Well, while you guys have a week to settle in between these episodes, I gotta listen to the next part right after this.
You guys need a little palate cleanser. Go drink a glass of water. Sorry for not really giving disclaimers in this, but like I said, you don't listen to a podcast on the Milwaukee Cannibal if you don't know what you're getting yourself into, so I hope you liked it.
Oof, yeah, okay. You can find us on all major platforms.
Wherever you get your podcasts, and if we're not where you get your podcasts, let me know and I'll fix that.
And we're on Instagram at Crime in the Coconut, Twitter at CITC Podcast, and what's the other one? Our email
at crimeinthecoconut@gmail.com.
Send us your, if you want to just like give, it doesn't have to be ideas on like new episodes, it can literally be just feedback or points on our last episodes, and we'll bring it up during the
by name if you want
to. Yeah, we'll give shout outs and stuff too. So I'm gonna work on some new cover art, maybe some merch art.
It's gonna be good. I'm wearing my Morbid t-shirt today that I just got, and Amanda's like, we need to make t-shirts. So yeah, we will. So there you go. Thanks for sticking it out for our longest episode yet. Love you.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye.